We're in week three of our series on Ruth, and this is where the plot thickens. We're talking about a lovely lady, but she's not named Brady, but she is a lovely lady that we're talking about when we talk at the story of Ruth. You remember that Ruth is Naomi's daughter-in-law. Naomi's husband passed away. Ruth's husband passed away. They were living in the land of Moab, which is where Ruth is from. Naomi decided that she wanted to move back to Bethlehem, where she was from. And so she decides to make that journey back. But Ruth then vowed her loyalty to Naomi and said, you know, where you go, I will go. Where you, your people will be my people and your God will be my God. And nothing shall separate us. Well, the truth is, Naomi was anything but optimistic about the events that was about to transpire as she was moving back. You know, when she arrived in Bethlehem, everybody said, oh, look, here comes Naomi back. You know, they hadn't seen her for a few years, but they still recognized her. They was happy to see her, but, of course, here she was coming back, a widow, and she was bringing back her daughter-in-law, who was a widow. And she says, no longer call me Naomi. Naomi meant pleasant. She said, call me Mara. Mara means bitter. And the Lord has made my life bitter. I went away full, but I've come home empty. The Lord has afflicted me. And in spite of Naomi's less than optimistic outlook, of course, her life was about to change. And her harvest was about to come in. And why? Well, there's a couple of reasons why that was going to happen. One was that even though she said some things that were negative, she continued to take positive steps. And yes, she was feeling very sorry for herself. When she left Moab and went on the road back to Bethlehem, she was going back without her husband, without her sons, but she was on the road back to Bethlehem, and so she was taking the first steps, and that were positive steps, even though she wasn't feeling very positive herself. But let this be a reminder to you, even when you don't feel positive about your life, you don't let that prevent you from taking positive steps to put you on the road to the place that you need to be and the place that you need to go. Now, another reason for the change in Naomi's life was her daughter-in-law Ruth. Naomi had wanted to be a burden to Ruth, and so she tried to get Ruth to go back to her own mother and her own father, but Ruth insisted on traveling with Naomi. You know why? I think there's a couple reasons. I think one, that Ruth wanted to live with God's people. That through the influence of Naomi and her family, she no longer wanted to live in the pagan land of Moab, and she didn't want to worship those false gods any longer. And she wanted to live in Bethlehem, where she would worship the true God and be in the presence with God, of God's people. Ruth also felt tremendous love and loyalty to Naomi. And maybe she felt like she owed her something. Maybe she worried about who would look after her. Maybe she just enjoyed her company. And all, whatever this reason was, the result was that Ruth said to Naomi, I want to stay with you from now on. Now, Naomi didn't guilt Ruth into staying with her. In fact, it was just the opposite. Naomi gave Ruth an opportunity to go back again and said, you know, maybe you need to think about this and go back again, but still, Ruth was determined that she was going to go with Naomi back to Bethlehem. You know, each one of us has the chance to be a Ruth in someone's life. There is someone for whom you can bring love and loyalty and encouragement and hope and help and support. And you may be all that they've got. So give some thought to how God can use you in this way in the life of others. Now, chapter 1 of the book of Ruth, we find Naomi saying, the Lord has made my life bitter. And I went away full. I came back empty. Chapter 2, we begin to see some change here. And after Ruth had taken the initiative to go out and do some work in the fields and glean the grain, and she came home telling Naomi, you said about this man Boaz out there that helped her. Naomi said, well, the Lord bless him. And she talked about what a wonderful man Boaz was. So we see something happening here, don't we? We see something transpiring. Little by little, Naomi was beginning to to abandon her pessimism, and little by little she was looking to a little more optimistic for the future. Then we come to chapter 3, where we are this evening, and the tables have turned. Now Naomi is beginning to look after Ruth. She devises a plan that will ensure a good future here for her daughter-in-law. And this chapter references some ancient cultural traditions that aren't easy for us, the modern reader, to understand. You know, and so this evening, we're going to work our way through this story. We're going to stop here and there. We're going to clarify some of the curiosities, and then we'll talk for a few minutes about some lessons that we can learn. So let's follow the story here in Ruth, the third chapter, verses 1 and 2. It says, "One day Naomi said to Ruth, 'My daughter, it's time that I found a permanent home for you so that you will be provided for. Boaz is a close relative of ours, and he's been very kind by letting you gather grain with his young women.'" Now, in the previous chapter, Boaz was referred to not just as a close relative, but as a kinsman redeemer. And a kinsman redeemer was a man who volunteered to take responsibility for an extended family. In ancient Israel, the custom was that if a man died and he left behind a widow, then it became the responsibility of the next of kin, often it was his brother, to marry the widow. He was to care for her financially. He was to see that there was a child for her to take care of, so that that deceased man's name and line would continue on. And this seems strange to us today, but let's remember this was 3,000 years ago, and it was in a far, far away place from where we are. There was no Social Security. There was no life insurance. And the tradition was established so that the most vulnerable members of society, widows and orphans, or widows and children, would be taken care of. And we see that when we get to the New Testament, often there is a reference about taking care of the widows and the children in the New Testament. It was something that would be the consciousness of even the early church to carry this on. But this custom also made it possible for a man to have some peace of mind, knowing that if he died, his wife and family would be taken care of. And it was the next of kin's responsibility to provide for a man's widow and children, but sometimes there was no next of kin. And sometimes the next of kin was not financially secure enough to take on the added responsibility. Well, therefore, each family group had kinsmen redeemers, men who were affluent enough to take on this added responsibility, men who were good-hearted, who could see that they could purchase back the property maybe, or sometimes they might have to purchase them out of from slavery. They might have to buy back the property that their family once had abandoned, whatever it was here, to help them get out of trouble. And as we will see in the next chapter, there were times when a kinsman redeemer would say no. That I can't do that. I can't take on that responsibility for several reasons. However, the idea was that in taking on this role in the family, the inclination was to say yes whenever it was possible. Now, Naomi apparently owned some property that was left to her, or property that her and her husband had jointly had at one point. It had a house, probably. It had some land, apparently. Maybe she owned it outright. Maybe there was something that was similar to a mortgage that was on it. We're not exactly clear, but obviously she had some property, but it didn't produce crops, so she needed a kinsman redeemer. And so I'm pretty sure, and looking at this, there was probably some kind of lien on her property here. But according to the ancient custom, Naomi could go to a kinsman redeemer and say, "Will you buy back my land and take me as your wife and take care of me for the rest of my life? And if we have no children together, when I die, that land will become yours and your sons will inherit it." And she could have done that, but she had seen how Boaz had treated Ruth. And remember, he was a little smitten. We got that already from the second chapter. He had kind of fell all over himself to make sure Ruth was taken care of in the fields. And I think that Naomi's reasoning went something like this. You know, there's no better man than Boaz. He seems to have an interest in Ruth. And I can make sure that Ruth is taken care of and that she has the happiness that she deserves. And if she's taken care of, I'll have a home too. This is the same woman who said a couple of chapters ago, remember chapter 1, she said, call me bitter because the Lord has afflicted me and given me so much suffering. But now instead of trying to redeem her property and gain a husband for herself, which she had every right to do, she seeks to gain a husband for her daughter-in-law. Well, last week I quoted from Warren Wiersbe. He said, if our circumstances change for the better, but we remain the same, then we will become worse. God's purpose in providence is not to make us comfortable, but to make us conformable to the image of His Son. Naomi's circumstances changed, and she became a better person. You know, obviously it would have been better if Naomi had been optimistic the whole time. She could have saved herself a lot of misery, but she did. She continued here to compound her mistakes. When things got better in life, she got better. And you'll find this is true in your life. You know, in the midst of your self-pity, God will often send something your way that you really haven't done anything to earn. Even while you're moaning and groaning and feeling sorry for yourself, He'll bring a blessing in your life. He does this to give you a chance to change your attitude if you'll take hold of it. You know, and that's exactly what Naomi did. Chapter 1 was a rough patch in Naomi's life. It was a phase, but it was not a permanent condition. You know, and so let's continue the story. Here's Naomi's plan. She's talking to Ruth about Boaz. He says, tonight, he'll be winnowing barley at the threshing floor. Now do as I tell you. Take a bath and put on perfume and dress in your nicest clothes. Then go to the threshing floor, but don't let Boaz see you until he has finished eating and drinking. Be sure to notice where he lies down. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down there. He will tell you what to do. And so we see the story goes on here. You know, this is not as perhaps as racy as it sounds. Let's go on to the next few verses. It sounds a little more. I will do everything you say, Ruth replied. So she went down to the threshing floor that night, followed the instructions of her mother-in-law. After Boaz had finished eating and drinking, was in good spirits, he lay down at the far end of the pile of grain and went to sleep. And Ruth came quietly and uncovered his feet and lay down. Now, certainly, this is not all as assorted as it sounds. I mean, after all, laying down at the guy, anybody's feet is not the best place to make your bed, is it? But Naomi didn't send Ruth to Boaz's house where he would be sleeping in his bed or in his pajamas. She sent him to the threshing floor where he'd be sleeping on a mat on the floor, fully clothed. And the plan was a little sociably unacceptable, true, but it was not completely scandalous. Here's what was going on. The harvest was over, and the field owners were grinding their barley. Just winnowing here. They worked on it all day long. They slept near their stock during the night to protect the feed. I mean, after they'd done all that work, and if they went home and left it there, somebody'd come along and say, you know, somebody done a lot of nice work for me. I load that all up and take it to my house. Kind of hard to put your identifying mark on some barley. And so in this case, the only way you could protect it was by staying there with it until it was over and you had it safely into your own barns and stuff. So this process took a few days. And so the field owners made it a special occasion. They would have sometimes a party along with it. So Naomi told Ruth to take note of where Boaz slept and lay down at his feet during the night. And this was just a symbolic gesture here. In this culture where it was not uncommon for entire households to sleep in the same room, the service office slept at the feet of the master. And so the story goes on, 3:8. Around midnight, Boaz suddenly woke up and turned over. He was surprised to find a woman lying at his feet. Now, the King James doesn't use the word surprise. It uses the word afraid and says, behold, a woman lay at his feet. And certainly, behold, indeed, you know, a woman laying at your feet, that's quite a surprise. Ruth 3:9, who are you, he asked. I am your servant Ruth, she replied. Spread the corner of your covering over me, for you are my family redeemer. Now, you know, we're getting into some interesting territory here. The colloquial Hebrew phrase here is, you know, he's asking, why are you here? What are you doing? And what's exactly going on? And so when they spread the corner of your covering over me, it is another symbolic phrase with a specific meaning. Boaz knew exactly what she wanted. What was she saying? She was saying, take me as your wife. You know? Today, if a man says to his girlfriend, will you give me your hand, and then he places a ring on it, she knows exactly what he's asking. It's the same with Boaz. Ruth's words in Acts made it clear that she wanted him, you know, and she said, I want to be your wife. Continue on, verse 10. The Lord bless you, my daughter Boaz exclaimed. You are showing even more family loyalty now than you did before, for you have not gone after a younger man, whether rich or poor. Now this shows how much Ruth and Naomi looked out for one another. Naomi could have sought a kinsman redeemer, a husband for herself, but she was worried about Ruth. Now Ruth, on the other hand, you know, would have been within her rights to seek out a younger man that was closer to her age to start a new life with from scratch, and she would have had no obligation to see that Naomi was provided for. So when Ruth came to Boaz and said, make me your wife, he knew that part of her motive was to see that Naomi was taken care of also. Now, verse 11. Now, don't worry about a thing, my daughter. I will do what is necessary. For everyone in town knows you are a virtuous woman. And then he brings up a possible snag in the plan. Verses 12 and 13. But while it's true that I am one of your family's redeemers, there is another man who is more closely related to you than I am. Stay here tonight, and in the morning I will talk to him. If he is willing to redeem you, very well. Let him marry you. But if he is not willing, then as surely as the Lord lives, I will redeem you myself. Now lie down here until the morning. Now again, we arrive at a custom that we don't fully understand. That's because we've grown up with the idea that you marry the person that you fall in love with. And I imagine we all prefer it that way. But the fact is that 3,000 years ago, people lived differently and thought differently. In fact, when we were in the Middle East traveling from Israel to Cairo, we traveled past several lodgings, and they would have a flag up. They had an eligible daughter. They would fly, I believe it was a white flag. I don't know if it's a flag of surrender or what. But anyway, they had a flag they would, and that meant they had an eligible daughter, and they would entertain suitors. An eligible daughter could be gone, could go for 5 to 7 camels. Still today, you know, depending on how much they valued their daughter. And so the custom continues on to some degree today, but particularly in ancient cultures, marriage was intended to be a more practical, functional agreement. You know, marriages were often arranged. You didn't marry someone that you fell in love with. You fell in love with somebody you hope that you marry. And therefore, according to the law, the kinsman redeemer, close in kin to the deceased man, had the first right to redeem the property and take responsibility of the family, including taking care of the widow and his wife. So Boaz says to Ruth, I'll make sure this works out for you. Either way, you'll have a husband and a home, and Naomi will be taken care of, and your future will be secure, even with him or with me. The Bible doesn't say this, but I think Boaz is saying, I sure hope it's me. You know? Verses 14 and 15. So Ruth lay at Boaz's feet till the morning, but she got up before it was light enough for people to recognize each other. For Boaz had said, no one must know that a woman was here at the threshing floor. Then Boaz said to her, bring your cloak and spread it out. He measured 6 scoops of barley into the cloak and placed it on her back. Then he returned to the town. So He does a nice gesture, gives her some more grain. Verse 16, when Ruth went back to her mother-in-law, Naomi, he asked, what happened, my daughter? The question is translated differently here, but Naomi used the exact same phrase that Boaz used when he found Ruth laying at his feet. Literally, it says, who are you? Just like Boaz wanted to know what was going on, Naomi asked the same question. Verse 16 through 18, Ruth told Naomi everything Boaz had done for her, and she added, he gave me these 6 scoops of barley and said, don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed. Then Naomi said to her, just be patient, my daughter, until we hear what happens. The man won't rest until he has settled things today. And this is where chapter 3 ends. And next week, in 2 weeks, we'll see how it resolved. Next week we'll be talking Thanksgiving. But this evening I want us to look quickly at some things that we can learn from the events of this chapter. There are 3. There are 3 lessons I think this chapter teaches. First of all, God can take care of you best when you're willing to take care of others. God can take care of you best when you're willing to take care of others. Now, Naomi could have found a solution to her problem in such a way that didn't benefit Ruth at all. And Ruth could have found a way out of her poverty in such a way that didn't include Naomi. However, they both refused to turn their back on one another. You know, and I heard a story a while back about a group of workers at a Waffle House. That's an upscale dining place, isn't it? The Waffle House. But there was a group in Alabama, and they bought lottery tickets together. And the mutual understanding was that if one person won, they would share it with the others. Well, one woman did win. She won a $10 million jackpot. And what did she do? She decided that she's going to keep it for herself, and if she refused to share it, they even went to court over it, and she won. But here's the most amazing thing about that story is that within a couple of years, this woman was working at another Waffle House. And not because she'd lost her fortune, but because she just missed the camaraderie of the common friendship. You know, it's your choice. You can seek out solutions to your problems in such a way that you get taken care of, or everyone else gets taken care of, so that no one is left out in the cold. You know, sometimes we seek out our own selfish solutions, and the problem with that is they'll never get solved that way. But when we're seeking out the solutions for others, God sees that our problems find solutions also. Now, here's the second lesson. The right way often requires a calculated risk. You know, Naomi's plan, sneaking into the threshing floor and proposing marriage in the middle of the night, came with quite a few risks here, you know. Not only could Boaz have said no, which would have devastated her, of course he could have taken advantage of Ruth in the darkness of the night, or he could have embarrassed her, he could have shamed her, he could have tarnished her reputation, he could have ruined her chances with another man. This was the risk that was involved in this plan. Faith requires a calculated risk. Sometimes you have to take chances. Ruth couldn't spend the rest of her life sitting at home on the sofa watching all the real-life programming on TV and waiting for Boaz to show up with her door with a box of candy. It wasn't going to happen. So Ruth was willing to take a risk. And at the very least, to risk looking foolish in order to create for herself the life that she wanted to live. And the risk paid off. Of course, Boaz was moved by her boldness, touched by her sincerity. In order to create the life you want to live, you have to do more than wait for the phone to ring. You need to look ahead to the possibilities, put together a plan, and be willing to take the calculated risk. Now here's the third thing. Not even the best plans go off without a hitch. You get the sense that Ruth didn't mind the idea of being married to Boaz. And that's probably why Naomi suggested it, but there was a snag. Another kinsman redeemer had first right of refusal here. And maybe he would want to purchase Naomi's land. Maybe he wanted to take Ruth as his wife. Maybe. And if you haven't read the last chapter, you may still be wondering what happened. But we're going to get there one way or the other, even if you have read it. But there's a snag here in this deal. Just because Naomi has a brilliant idea, and just because Ruth follows through with the precision here, doesn't mean that all the pieces fall immediately into place. Even when God is moving in your life, working in your life, performing miracles in your life, you still have to deal with glitches from time to time. Dealing with glitches means that you have to wait. I don't know about you, but waiting is not my thing. I would rather do just about anything than deal with delay. I hate getting stopped at the stop. It's a delay to me. I hate getting behind somebody who decides that they are going to go the speed limit through Piedmont. I hate being held up. I hate delays. I hate times when patience is required of me. But guess what? If you want to experience God's miraculous intervention in your life, you'll have to wait from time to time. You'll have to deal with snags, complications, and setbacks. And it doesn't mean that God isn't involved in what you're doing. It's just a necessary part of the process. You know, when Ruth told Naomi about the situation, Naomi said to her, "Just be patient, my daughter, until we hear what happens. The man won't rest until he has settled things today." The same thing can be said about the God we serve. The situation you're in or the problem that you're facing, the solution you seek, He's taking care of it. And as David said, "He who watches over you will not slumber. Indeed, he who watches over Israel will neither slumber nor sleep." God is paying attention to what is going on in your life. Even when there's a delay, when there's a holdup, a glitch, He's paying attention. He'll provide the right answer for you at the right time. All in God's great time. You know, Ruth's story is a story of redemption. In fact, it's a story, the book of Ruth is read at one of the feasts of Israel completely, because it is a wonderful story of redemption. Already we've seen a big transformation in their lives, especially in Naomi's attitude, and there's even more to come. You know, this evening was a significant step for Ruth, because she was able to accept the terms of surrender to God's miraculous blessing in her life. So what are the terms of surrender? It's not that you give up and quit. It's not that you let go and let God do everything. It's that you do all you can and you leave the results in His hand. If you're willing to look out for others, you're willing to take a necessary risk, you're willing to deal with the inevitable delays, and God is ready marvelous thing in your life.